he's the one person that we have had. Oh, weird. I hear music.
Oh, it's not me.
This is the weirdest thing ever. It's like Western music.
I don't know where it would be coming from.
All right, welcome to the Rated NA podcast. This is episode number 326, and I am your host, Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And Matt is...
Painting.
Yeah.
Tell the truth.
Yeah, we can tell the truth. He's painting. So
yeah,
he's out. I'm in. I'm back. That's exciting.
Welcome, man. Welcome, man. This was super exciting. It's like rare for our schedules to line up these days. So
I know.
Welcome back.
So I am thankful to be here.
Yeah, it's the day after Thanksgiving. It's Black Friday.
Yeah,
we are recording in our houses.
Yep. So let's see, we're gonna talk about I've been gone for a while. Obviously I haven't been on this show in a few episodes, so I would like to kind of do a what I've been playing this summer kind of thing, where I'm gonna talk about a couple of games and remind people of all the great stuff that came out over the summer. There's some new DLC for a game that I really enjoyed called The Surge, which is like a Souls type game, if you're into those kinds of games. You're going to talk about a game called Shovel Knight Treasure Trove, which I think was a release for Switch, right?
It was, yep. Yeah.
And then I think, time permitting, you're going to talk about the Netflix show Sabrina.
Yeah. Cool. And also Kingdom Rush Vengeance, which just came out 2 days ago, I think.
Yep. So I think what I would like to do this week is really just get right into it. And I want you to tell me about Kingdom Rush.
All right. So I have a very special place in my heart for Ironhide Studios and Kingdom Rush and these games. One reason, because these are always my playing games, because they do not require an internet connection to play on your tablet or your mobile device. So if you've never played a Kingdom Rush game, they are sort of real-time strategy tower defense games done in the style of like sort of super deformed Warcraft 3. The level of polish is like off the charts.
Incredible.
It's beautiful. These games are so well done. Probably, honestly, the best mobile titles you could ever really get your hands on. They're gorgeous and super, super fun. Vengeance is the latest version of the Kingdom Rush games. It's all new. You play as the bad guys this time, which is super fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
Meaning that all of your units and all of your heroes are now villains, and all of the waves coming at you are like dwarves and humans and elves. So it kind of flips the tables. And obviously all the architecture is different this time. It has a really fun narration where you're trying to get revenge on the humans. But
because the last one I played was the sci-fi theme one. So they're going back to like the fantasy roots.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Iron Marines was their RTS, their take at RTS. So they, you know, did an actual RTS game where you could direct each and every unit.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Marines, absolutely fantastic. If you haven't played that yet, that's like a true RTS game that, you know, anyone who's a fan of RTS should definitely pick up for your iOS or Android device. This is back to more tower defense where you have waves of enemies trying to get to a goal point, and you set up different towers to try and block the enemies from coming. But you also control specific units and heroes, and you can control different traps and bombs and abilities of those heroes as well. So you have like a super unit that you control in the field, and you can, you know, plan out your strategies and try and block the enemies from reaching the goal. But there's so many different layers of strategy in Kingdom Rush Vengeance. It's, you know, like I said, it's so well polished and so well done. This is the type of title that I would pick up on PC, you know, were it ever transferred over to a PC title. Because I feel like sometimes I don't want to play something that actually looks this gorgeous on my mobile device. I want to see it like on a nice big, you know, big giant HD monitor.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, so this just came out a few days ago. They're currently running a Black Friday sale. I don't know how soon this episode is going to go live, but The game is currently $4.99 in the App Store, so it's you know, it is a priced game. That price at $4.99 will get you three of the heroes that you have to kind of unlock through progression and the whole game. So you get to play through the whole game with no sort of gating at all. So you get the whole thing for $5. There are, I think, six to eight additional heroes that you get that you can get through various price points. So that's really how this company, Ironhide, has always done their pricing. They've always just given you the whole game at a set price, and then you buy additional heroes. But the heroes are all so different and so incredibly fun. There's like dragons and yetis and giant like dwarven or demon style tanks. Just really, really cool stuff.
There's a lot of customization too. Like I think when you say tower defense, you know, maybe in some people's minds it puts into this idea of simplicity, but these games are so deep and so complex and so well balanced that you could play the same missions with different characters, or even the same characters kind of spec'd out in different ways, and have a unique experience each time. And I think, you know, if it's anything like the previous games were, there are reasons to replay the levels to, I think, you know, get star ratings or something like this that they do in those kinds of games.
Yeah, it's the same this time.
Mm-hmm. So there's like a lot of replay value in a game like this. No matter what you do, even if you just buy the base package, you'll still get a lot of mileage out of a game like this, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. So all the different hero units do have different skill trees, and you can choose different specs, like you said, for each one of the different heroes. So the starting hero for this one is like an orcish warlord. So he can do like an area of effect stun, and he can do like he can summon a bunch of little orcs to assist him in battle. And he can also do like every time he attacks a single opponent, each attack gets stronger and stronger and stronger. So as he attacks like large enemy units, he's a great person to bring down those enemies' hit points. And like I said, you can spec him different ways and try out different things. It's so incredibly fun. Each map will take you, depending on the complexity of it, between 5 and 10 minutes to probably beat. So it's a perfect game to kind of play on the go. And like I said, it does not require an internet connection. So once you have, you know, the units that you want downloaded, you can play them on a plane or in the subway or wherever the heck you want to play this game. And it is just, it's great. It's not a battery hog either. It exists in its own little realm of awesomeness.
That's great. I to your point about being able to play it on, you know, on PC, I really feel like gaming is sort of becoming more fluid now, since platforms are starting to, you know, reach sort of comparable levels of power and polish that you can achieve on something like a mobile device, as well as, you know, PC sort of becoming more mobile too, when you have something like a laptop or even like a Surface or whatever. And I really agree with you that I do wish that some of these games would be more universally available, you know, games like Kingdom Rush. You know, Ubisoft just put out a sort of a Fallout Shelter style game called Assassin's Creed Rebellion.
Right.
It doesn't really work on my phone, unfortunately, because my phone is old, but I really wish, you know, Fallout Shelter started on mobile and came to Xbox, basically, so you could play it on Xbox, but also get it as a Windows 10 app. And I really wish, like, some of these games were able to do that as well, because, you know, there would be more traction and more ways to play. And obviously being able to sync saves across those devices is really something that I hope happens in the future. That would be sweet.
It's very cool. Like, what you're saying is absolutely true. So I got a gaming laptop last year, mainly because I've been traveling a lot this year. So I got a gaming laptop that could run a bunch of stuff decently, and ended up playing just a ton of stuff, you know, in hotels because just like it makes sense now. You know, when you can get a really solid gaming PC or gaming laptop for, you know, less than $1,000, and then you have something that you can really play your PC games on the go. I've been loving it. I'm really glad I picked it up.
Cool. Why don't we talk a little bit about the news?
Yeah, let's do that. So news stories. The first is just a bit of kind of selfish personal news, but it's exciting. We got invited to be one of the featured podcasts of Star Wars Celebration 2019. So
Yay. This
happened to us last year. Scott and I actually did at this point it was I think two years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they skipped Celebration last year in the States, but this next year, 2019, in Chicago, Star Wars Celebration is coming back, And we're going to be one of the featured podcasts. So we don't have any news really beyond that. I think there's a little more than a dozen podcasts that were chosen to participate. It just means we get to go up on a little stage and do our show live, and we'll do our best to record it and make sure that you guys get a chance to listen to it if you're not at Star Wars Celebration. But if you're planning on going to Star Wars Celebration 2019 in Chicago, please, we're probably going to be saying this for the next 6 months, but please come say hi to us and come hang out.
For sure.
We'd love to see you. We don't have any idea what our program is going to be yet. We'll probably try and nab a special guest to come on the show with us, but we'll see how that goes. But that's just exciting. We just found out last week that we were chosen again for this, and it's cool. I did also find out that the placement is like a lottery. So last time Scott and I got there, and we were the first podcast to go on for the whole show. And
we set up the gear and everything.
We set up the gear for everybody.
It was great. We got to bump Chris Gore's time slot for his podcast. So that was exciting as well.
That was very nice of him to allow us to do that.
Yeah, extremely nice.
Yeah. So we'll see what the lottery gives us this time, but it's exciting stuff, and I can't wait to do it. I'm excited about all the Star Wars stuff coming out in the next couple years. I actually haven't watched any of Resistance at all. So,
yeah, I know. I'm still I'm a little bit backlogged. Just recently, earlier this year, I did finish Star Wars Rebels, and I thought it was fantastic, and I tell everyone about it. Like, it's, you know, sort of the gravity of the show is much greater than I thought it was going to be. So I'm really excited to see what happens in Resistance as well.
Right. The second, the last two seasons of Rebels get incredibly adult and incredibly intense.
Yep.
Like, it starts off being a lot of like Clone Wars. Like, Clone Wars was a little juvenile in the beginning. And then I think Dave Filoni just gets a nosebleed and he's like, fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm doing what I want to do. And then all of a sudden the last two seasons of those shows get insane. So definitely check out Rebels if you haven't already.
Cool. I have a little bit of news that is sort of hot off the presses. I think it was earlier, maybe last week or early this week. A favorite game of mine, Sunset Overdrive, is now available on PC. So you can get it on Steam and through the Windows Store as well. If you get it through, I don't know about Steam, but if you get it through the Windows Store, it's got a different set of achievements, which is great. So I'm totally into, I want to play Sunset Overdrive again on my PC. It runs great on Xbox, but I'd love to see what it looks like playing on a gaming PC. It's I'm pretty sure that it might not include the multiplayer content, but it does include all of the DLC content aside from the multiplayer. So Sunset Overdrive, the release on console, did have two DLC packs, which was an oil rig and a sort of a sci-fi themed area that you could go to. All of that stuff, including title updates, is included in this game, to the best of my knowledge. And I think it's only $20 on the Windows Store.
It's pretty awesome.
And if you know,
it's pretty awesome. I saw it was there just the other day, and I like an idiot. I love that game, and I think I got close to the very end of it, but never finished it.
Oh, that's too bad.
Because it came out during one of those times where I was just playing a ton of stuff on Xbox, and I think it was just a very crowded time of releases.
Yeah, yeah.
So jumped off of it for a little while and never went back. But I feel very fondly about that game. It was a very unique experience. Mm-hmm.
And I know people are super high on the Spider-Man game, which is from the same studio. And so certainly if you are, a PS4 only person and you really enjoyed Spider-Man, you should go back now that this game is available on PC and play Sunset Overdrive, because it was sort of the precursor to Spider-Man in many ways. Same incredible, a big open world, a great traversal mechanic, a bunch of weapons. It's totally punk rock and has this cool DIY feeling with a great character customization feature. There's a male and a female protagonist, and the I played as the female in the console version, and the voice acting is phenomenal as the main character. It's a blast. It's a total blast. So Sunset Overdrive is now available on PC, Windows Store, and Steam. So definitely go ahead and check that out also.
Awesome. Very, very cool. I mean, this is news that, obviously everybody knows at this point, but I was traveling for a few weeks and I was getting off a plane, and one of my buddies messaged me and let me know that Stan Lee passed away. And obviously, as a lifelong comic fan, it was pretty rough on me, as it was for many other people. I don't really have too many big anecdotes or stories to share about like my experiences with Stan Lee. But what I will say is that when I was a kid, I grew up reading his stories, and he created something to the effect of like 350 plus characters mm-hmm. over the years. And many of those characters are like my favorite characters that I grew up with. Read so many comics as a kid that I have joked on this podcast many times that those characters were like family members to me. Like they meant a lot to me, because a lot of my childhood memories were just staring at those pages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the fact that they all came from, you know, at least partially from his imagination is pretty fantastic. And also I feel like the way that he carried himself in his life, was, he always encouraged creativity and encouraged, uplifting one another and inclusivity and I think kindness, which I felt was very special. So yeah, he lived to be 95, which is a really long lifetime. And, you know, he had a lot of adventures along the way, which is pretty fantastic. The only short story I'll tell is, I've been going to San Diego Comic-Con since 2000. Yep. So this coming up year will be, this will be my 18th, cause I missed only 1 year. And, 1 year I went by myself, cause a bunch of my friends that were going to go with me said, we're going to go on tour with our band, and they abandoned me. So, so I just bit the bullet and I went to Comic-Con myself. I want to say it was likely 2003, maybe 2004. And, it was, you know, I had a great time going by myself. It was super fun, but, I would go out to breakfast and stuff by myself too. Cause I was like, you know, fuck it. I'm going to do the whole experience. So yeah. I was at a little diner. Exactly. I was at a little diner sort of off the beaten path. Really like, I don't know, maybe 6, 7, 8 blocks from the San Diego Convention Center. And I was sitting down just eating my bacon and eggs. I looked up at the bar and it was Stan Lee at the bar by himself. And he was just eating and nobody recognized him. So that's at that insane. Time, I think there had only been, he'd only done like 2 or 3 Marvel cameos at that point. So I think he had done the X-Men cameo, and maybe like the original Fantastic Four movie cameo. So he hadn't been mm-hmm. in like all of the Marvel movies, and his, unless you're like a comic book fan, you may have not in 2002, 2003 really, really recognized Stan Lee. It's not like now my parents would recognize him, right? But back then they, mm-hmm. they wouldn't have. So he could eat at a diner by himself as an 80-something-year-old man, and people would just leave him alone. And normally I'm the type of person that would go up and talk to someone. Just, that's just how I am, especially at conventions and stuff.
I think talk to somebody is a generous way of saying you would shout at them and go like, hey, Felicia Day, what are you doing?
Yeah. Right. No, it's like, you know, when I like people and I care about what they do, I do not mind telling them that I appreciate what they do.
Exactly.
So it can come across as being like, you know, over boisterous or overexcited. But I didn't do that with Stan Lee, because he's the one person that we have had. Oh, weird. I hear music. I don't know where the music is coming from.
Oh, it's not me.
This is the weirdest thing ever. Hold on. It's like Western music.
I don't hear it.
Really?
I don't.
Okay.
None of my tabs are playing anything.
I don't know where it would be coming from. It's coming through my headset. Hold on. Maybe it's a commercial in this.
Do you have a,
anyway,
can you, should you can mute your browser.
I closed everything.
Oh, okay.
We're good. Anyway, so all of a sudden I just heard like Wild West music.
Oh, you can separately mute your browser. That's what I've done.
Oh, that's probably
through the,
what
through
I
the mixer,
do.
Yeah. The volume mixer.
So anyway, we can leave all that in.
That's yeah, just, oh, totally. Yeah, why not?
So I'm sitting there and I've had a couple opportunities through the site and stuff to talk to Stan Lee, but I've always not really wanted to. And part of it's because of this experience. I just watched him eat and I watched him talk to the people at the diner, you know, the people serving him food, and watched him be Stan Lee just by himself as this like creative genius, like little old man eating his bacon and eggs and drinking his coffee. And he was so kind and so cool to the people. And I just creeped on him. I just watched him eat from like a distance of 5 feet away and just kind of marveled at him being him. And he got up and paid and left. And I got up and paid and left shortly after that. And I always kind of joked in my head that I kind of had breakfast with Stan Lee without actually having breakfast with Stan Lee, because we ate breakfast at the same time and I just kind of spied on him. But like I said, later in life, I had a couple opportunities to like talk to him and interview him through the site. And I always kind of shied away from them because there are very few people in my life that I really, truly feel like artistically are just so beyond anything I could ever ask them about that they haven't already said. Or like I could really bring anything to the conversation about that person. One of those people was Stan Lee, because he just, he'd been interviewed so many times and had said so many of the same things. And also I was just afraid of, being that close to one of my true idols. So I never really did any of those interviews, but anyway, very sad to see him go, very thankful that he, did what he did, and really happy now that I have a kid and my kid gets to run around in his Spider-Man underwear and play with all his, all his cool superhero toys. And it's a fun,
his legacy will live like forever. You know what I mean? Like his mark on society is tremendous. And so, to be able to, to be able to put so many good things into the world and then also conduct yourself in a way that's sort of consistent with, positive vibes and having the work ethic that he did. I think he was at like every single con that we had been to for the last like 5 years. You know what I mean? Like he was everywhere. It was incredible.
Oh, so, it's true. Yeah. And it would be so weird because we'd just be there and he would just walk by with like, on his own or maybe with like one handler or something like that. But little old, like at that point he was like 90 years old, just like wandering the con floor. And you're like, this is just, he just loves this. Like this is his world, and that he helped build. So, we'll miss him very much. Super glad for everything he did. I just figured we owed him at least a few minutes.
Of course.
Thank you, So what do you want to talk about next?
Let's see. I want to just give a quick update. This is kind of like from the summer, but I haven't been on in a while. So I'm going to kind of give a lot of updates on things I've been playing and things that are sort of in my ecosystem and things that I think might be relevant to our listeners as well. A game that I really enjoyed that came out a while back was Vampire, which was a release from Don't Nod, the studio that also makes Life is Strange and a game prior to that, Remember Me. If you only know Don't Nod from Remember Me, you may not know that they do make some action, more action-oriented games. So Remember Me was a kind of like a melee fighting game, a linear story. They recently released a game called Vampire, which we talked about on this podcast. It, takes place in London, I think post-World War I during the plague. And the main character is a vampire. Obviously, he's also a doctor. And so it kind of creates this weird juxtaposition of, him needing to thirst for blood, but him also like trying to stick by his oath of being a doctor. And so the game is really interesting. It's dark and moody. It's kind of like in the vein of a soul style game, but not as hardcore, but it is still quite challenging. There have been a couple of updates to this game since we last talked about it, which I think are sort of interesting and relevant to talk about. The first thing is that someone is working on starting to develop a TV show based on the vampire.
What?
Yeah, exactly. And I remember I was listening to one of the recent podcasts that you did with Matt, and you mentioned White Wolf and he got excited because he thought there was going to be, the vampire TV show. So I thought it'd be interesting to bring it up now that this game, which is not based in that universe, but is still, I think would be a pretty good vampire show if they were to, develop it correctly. They're going to make a TV series out of this game, which I think is kind of cool. And I know
that is really cool.
And I remember when we originally reviewed this game, you kind of gave us a whole history lesson on what was happening during that time in London with what was the plague that was going around at post World War One?
Big influenza, just a super flu.
Yeah, but it was, you said it was like a really dark and terrible time, and it was like the perfect setting for vampires. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just think that it's interesting that, hopefully a TV show will come from this. And, we've been around long enough to know that like this is a thing that may or may not eventually happen. We got teased a while back with a TV show for Lock and Key and that never came out. But I really do hope, this one sees the light of day, and I think it could have a lot of potential and promise, which would be pretty cool. Yeah.
I love that we say this all the time on the show, but it's definitely the golden age of TV where there's so much good stuff. There's honestly just too much to watch. So it's very odd. And I think, you know, streaming television has definitely opened a lot of doors, you know, for creativity. But at the same time, it's just this flood, you know, at some point something bad's going to happen and everything is going to be, you know, priced up the teeth. But right now we're okay.
Yeah. So far, so good. The second update that I had for this game is, let's see, I haven't been on for a while, but I think maybe a month or two ago, they actually provided a massive update to the game where they added difficulty modes to the game, because the original release of the game had one difficulty mode. And the way that it worked was that, you know, by progressing through the game, you would earn experience points, and you could use those experience points to, you know, increase your health or gain new abilities or gain more stamina. You know, if you've ever played a Souls type game, you know that having things like health and stamina are important when you're trying to beat the enemies and beat bosses and stuff like that. But I think that it was good of them to introduce both sort of an easy mode or a narrative mode, sometimes is what it's called, as well as a harder difficulty mode for people that are sort of more on that hardcore end of gameplay. And that way, you know, I think that is appreciated, because for people that are just interested in what the story of this game is, especially considering that they want to develop it into a television show, I think that adding a mode like that would increase the game's sort of audience and accessibility while still allowing people to play the game, you know, in a very difficult way if that's what they choose to do.
Right.
So, and they, you know, they also added a lot of, you know, quality of life improvements to the game as well. Vampire is like frequently on sale. I've seen it gone on sale a couple of times, like throughout the summer and probably for Black Friday and beyond. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes on sale, you know, before the end of the year again. But it is available everywhere. I've been playing on Xbox. I think it's also available on PC and PlayStation 4. So just a game that I really enjoyed and something to keep an eye on, especially for, I think, people in our audience who, you know, hear us talk about like the good old days of playing Vampire and Werewolf and all that stuff, like from back in the day. Vampire should certainly be in your warehouse. Also for Souls fans as well, if you like to play those kinds of games.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'll probably end up picking this up eventually. Again, I'm in this weird place where time is the most precious commodity right now. So I saw like the newest Assassin's Creed is on sale for $40 during Black Friday. And I'm like, damn, that's a really, $40 is really cheap. And I'm like, oh man. And Shadow of War is like currently, I think, $13 or $12.
It's like the complete edition, right? Something like that.
Yeah. And it's like, that is just dirt cheap. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, but I don't have 100 hours.
Yeah.
It could be 10 cents, but like, how do I play these games? Yeah. Come on.
You can add 10 more games to your library, but you can only play one at a time.
Yeah. That's the whole thing.
And so, to your point, I do remember, cause you know, our buddy Jen, who listens to the show, and I talk to on Twitter a lot. You know, we do a lot of achievement hunting together. And I remember her seeing that she had 100%ed Assassin's Creed. So I wrote her and I was like, oh, hey, was this like a quick completion? Because you got it done in like a week and a half. And she's like, I don't know that I'd call it fast. It was like 100 hours. And I was like, oh, man. Like, I mean, obviously, like her and I are both sort of super fans of Assassin's Creed. So, plowing through a game like that would be ideal. But I, again, where do you find 100 hours to play a game, especially in our situation where there's just, you know, limited time to play, unfortunately.
But that's the only problem with those massive, massive games is just finding the time to devote to them, right?
Yeah, and what I, you know, it's funny what I end up doing, and I was talking to a colleague at work about this, and there's this idea of the time commitment, and you might say to yourself, oh, you know, I'd really like to play Assassin's Creed, but I really only have like an hour to play, so I'm going to play a shorter game. And you know what you end up doing with those shorter games? You end up playing them for 3 hours. Because you don't have to make the time commitment. You know, if you play Assassin's Creed, you're going to be playing for 3 hours. But if you say, oh, I'm just going to play an hour of Kingdom Rush, and then you end up playing for 3 hours, it's the same, you know, you still devoted the same amount of time.
That is pretty true.
To the gameplay. But it's just one of those funny things. I did the same thing last night. I played a game that I knew was supposed to be about an hour and a half long. It was Black the Fall. It was one of those Limbo-style games. You know, the guide said an hour and a half completion. I ended up playing for like 2-3 hours anyways, just because I really enjoyed it. And it's like, well, there you go. You know, just another 3 hours that I could have been playing something else, but that was still fun anyways.
Right.
Yeah. Do you have any other news?
The only other thing that we kind of, we talked about this a few times on the show, with the Telltale closing down, and we briefly touched on this, that Skybound's picking up development. But the quick update is that all the Walking Dead games and a number of the Telltale games, I want to say actually all of them at this point, were taken off of Steam as this transition's happening. Mm-hmm. So they delisted all the Walking Dead games, and now Skybound is picking up development again. Development has started on the last two chapters of the Walking Dead game. And once they get control over everything, they're going to put everything back up on Steam. But for now, you can't get them. But I did read that if you had purchased like the whole season pack, that that's still going to be honored when they take control over, you know, the IP over.
Oh, that's good.
So I don't know. This is just a bit of information that's, it's weird. I can't recall the last time this happened where a game was, you know, partially completed and then changed hands to a different developer. And apparently some of the people that were working on it are working on the latest chapter. So they're switching, you know, over from Telltale to Skybound.
That's wild.
It's super unfortunate and just different and weird. I remember when THQ closed down, there were a number of studios that kind of were in the verge of being shuttered, and then they kind of opened up when they got purchased by various different places. I want to say one of the, like, the South Park game, Stick of Truth, started out like being like shuffled a couple times.
I'll
have to look into the history of that.
I don't remember who made the first game, but I think didn't Obsidian do the Fractured But Whole, I believe.
Yes.
Or maybe they did the first one. I don't remember, but I think it was two different studios that made those games.
If anything, it was definitely published or like going to be published by different people.
Yeah.
Like I remember, like initially it was THQ and then it got, you know, passed along once or twice. So anyway, it's just it's a weird bit of news. And I hope, you know, everyone that is currently working on is doing it under the conditions that they want, and that they're not being taken advantage of in any way. I don't know any of the logistics behind what that's like, but I hope they all have health insurance and they're all,
I know,
they're all in a good place. So
yeah, it seems like the games industry is so volatile, and you can look at somebody or a studio or, you know, a developer, a publisher, or whatever, and think like, wow, that person is super stable in their job, or like that studio is going to be around forever. And then next thing you know, it's like, we're closed. And it's, it's such a dicey situation to be in. Just because things move so quickly and things can change in a moment's notice.
Absolutely. I mean, even, you know, Telltale's a perfect example. They were absolutely in top of the heap, king of the pack. And then, you know, a couple decisions later and they're not. And that's just the way the industry works, right? So yeah. I don't think any studio, any publisher is immune to...
Agreed.
To bad things happening at some point. So
yeah, it kind of...
Crazy stuff.
That story also kind of reminds me of, do you remember that game Kingdoms of Amalur that was on 360?
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's sort of a, I don't know, there's certainly a market for that game. And I think that for a while people have wanted to see that game come to backwards compatibility on Xbox One.
Right.
I think just within the last few months, that IP was acquired by THQ as well.
Okay.
And so now people are like, what's happening there? Like, are you going to make another game? Is it going to be available for Xbox One? You know, because there's certainly people that want to play it and go back and play it. I remember playing the demo and, you know, thought it was fantastic. But again, it was one of those things that went on the game pile and then never came out of the game pile again. It disappeared.
Yeah, I did the same
into
thing.
Into the void.
Maybe 4 or 5 hours in and I couldn't do it.
Hi, this is Melissa Hutchison, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
I don't know what to tell you, man. It's been so long since I've been on this show. I don't remember what I've talked about the last time I was on, because I think I was playing things, and then PAX happened, and then I disappeared for a while. So it's like, I have this laundry list of games that I've been playing. We can kind of...
Well, let's pick like the best of like games that have kind of knocked your socks off.
Yeah,
because I have a couple little ones too I can talk about.
Yeah, for sure. Has Matt talked about Forza Horizon 4?
A little bit. He more or less said that it was more of the same magic.
Yeah.
And it made him very happy.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would tell anybody the same thing as well. certainly, I think part of the theme of what I've been playing lately is, you know, some of these games are in Game Pass. Forza Horizon 4 is in Game Pass, which is kind of like a killer deal for something like that. Which is, if you're not familiar, Xbox Game Pass is sort of Xbox's subscription service. First party titles are coming out day and date with, you know, with the formal release of the game. So if you were a Game Pass subscriber, you had access to Forza Horizon 4 the day that it was released, you know, for everyone else as well. And then that's sort of being improved at this point where, you know, a game like Crackdown 3, when that comes out, I think early next year, you can actually preload that game on your system right now if you're a Game Pass subscriber. And so when it's available, you can play, you know, right on the hour that it unlocks, which is pretty exciting. But
pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, it is a great deal. Games like what the heck is on there? So all the Gears games, I think, are moving over to there if they're not on there already. And you have the State of Decay games, which are State of Decay 2 is relatively new. That got reviewed very well. So there's a lot on there.
There's a lot of indies and stuff, too. A lot of Microsoft published titles are on there. It's kind of like Netflix in the sense where, you know, every month things come and go. Not to derail this too much, but something that might be relevant, you know, for like family play is that I believe that both the Disneyland Adventures and the Rush Pixar game are both available. I've been playing those with my kid in the evening and he really enjoys those. And, you know, if you are looking for something to play with younger children, I would say that the Disneyland Adventures game is a little bit more forgiving for, you know, teaching kids how to like do things like use a joystick and press buttons. But obviously the Pixar game is really exciting as well and a little bit more, I don't know, maybe a little bit more current with some of the references. Both of these games came out on Xbox 360 for Kinect, and then they were sort of redone to be available to play with a controller on Xbox One as well as the Windows PC store as well. And if you are a Game Pass person, there are a handful of titles that are, you know, currently available. You know, the ones that are Play Anywhere, the cross-play games, you can get those through the Windows Store too as part of your Game Pass subscription, so that's kind of cool.
Very cool.
But yeah, Forza Horizon 4, I'm playing it as well. I probably enjoy it for the same reasons that Matt does. And it's pretty much the same thing that I said about number three, right? Is that there are so many different ways for you to approach the game that it doesn't really matter what your play style or objective is for playing. You can get some value out of the game and really have a good time. It's a game you can get lost in. That's one of those games where you can say, you know what, I'm going to play for an hour and do a race. And then 5 hours later, you're like, oh, cool. I need to go to bed. But, you know, there's tons of cars. If you're a car person, you can enjoy it. If you just like to, they do a really good job at making you feel like there's a sense of freedom for you to just sort of explore, you know, the countrysides of the UK and go visit different places and really just kind of, you know, it's not just races either. Like if you want to do stunts like drifting courses or speed traps, you can do that. If you're into tuning cars, you can do that. If you're into painting cars, you can do that. There are a lot of hidden items hidden throughout the world. So if you're into doing collectibles or just exploring, that's available too. Something that I really find to be refreshing about this game is that every hour on the hour, they do like this Forzathon live event where the game sort of invites you and everybody else on the instance of the server that you're playing on, which I think can be, I don't know, sometimes up to like, I feel like I've seen like 40 people once on a server. But every hour on the hour, they invite everybody to sort of congregate at one spot. And then all of you participate in these like co-op based objectives. So it'll be like, you know, get 2 million points by drifting. And then all of a sudden, like all 40 cars are like drifting around this zone. And then you complete the objective. It's three separate objectives. And you race to the next place and you try to complete the objective. So the idea is that you try to get all of these three challenges done within a set time frame. And then that's the event. It gives you special Forza points that you can go into like this like event shop and unlock special cars that are only available for like a certain time and stuff. So it's just a really fun way to keep things fresh. The cool thing is that if you don't want to have anything to do with sort of that persistent online multiplayer shared world experience, you can just shut that off with a press of a button and be in your own world and play your own game. And the game functions exactly the same way. It's like no different.
It's very cool.
Which I think is cool. So like if there was anything I would say that was sort of an update from number three, it's that it's really just like, hey, there's a shared world that you can participate in. at a moment's notice. It's not just competitive, or you can just go for that solitary experience and just zone out, listen to the radio stations and have a good time. So that was certainly
That's so cool. Yeah. It'd be so hard to go back to any other racing game after playing three, mm-hmm. just because it was like, I'm not a huge fan of racing games just because that's just not, I mean, I like them, but I'm not going to like lose my mind like right. Matt does over them. Mm-hmm. But for me, that was the perfect racing game mm-hmm. experience because it was non-structured. I felt like it allowed me to just play the way I wanted to play and have fun with whatever kind of car that I wanted to have fun with.
Exactly.
Like, I think I made a replica of the car from Tarantino's Death Proof, and that's all I drove around was this old, I think it was like an old, not a Camaro, but a Charger or Challenger yeah. or Charger. Someone listening will clarify for me. But yeah, so I love that you could do that, you know?
That's the best part about this game, I think, and what they really get right is that nothing is gated to you if you choose to play the game in a specific way. Like, everything is available to everyone. And then, yeah, like, it might take you longer to acquire money to unlock a car, but you level up so fast in a game like this. And again, the leveling doesn't matter, but every time you level up, you get wheel spins that give you money or a car or a customization for your, you know, your avatar. And so sort of the rewards just keep coming in as you play, no matter how you're playing. And so, you know, eventually you will be able to get the cars you want or go to the places you want to go to. Like, everything is available to you right from the start, whether you're playing on easy or hard or doing races or just exploring. Like, it's all sort of there for you. And I think that's sort of what part of the magic of that game is that it doesn't try to make you feel bad for playing the way you want to play. Everybody is sort of encouraged to enjoy that game in the way that they want to, which is kind of nice.
Very cool.
So why don't you tell me about something that you've been playing? Because I've certainly got plenty to talk about.
So I picked up Shovel Knight Treasure Trove, which has been out for a while. I want to say it's been out for over a year on PC. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not news. And I'm very, I think the original Shovel Knight came out in 2014. I always saw it up at PAX. I had a nice space up on the sixth floor of PAX West. So I've been seeing Shovel Knight everywhere. I've been seeing cosplay everywhere, but for some reason I never picked it up. I regret that heavily now. I absolutely, absolutely love everything Shovel Knight at this point. It is an 8-bit retro kind of throwback to, if you imagine mixing like a Souls game with a Mega Man mixed with like Ghouls and Ghosts. And that is Shovel Knight. So you play as Shovel Knight and you face off against different knights. You get to choose kind of where you go. The bosses you face off against are similar to like a Mega Man style level choice. And all the different opponents are like, you know, like King Knight and Plague Knight and Spectre Knight. So you face off against these different knights. But I want to say the thing about Shovel Knight and Treasure Trove in general is that the level design and the platforming is challenging, but also just forgiving and fun. So there are checkpoints along the way. When you die, you go back to your checkpoint. You have health bars that are a little bit more forgiving than like a Mega Man, so you can take a little bit more damage than you can in a Mega Man game. The checkpoints are frequent enough where you don't ever get frustrated, at least I don't, where I feel like I'm having to redo incredibly different difficult platforming sections over and over and over again.
And you love platforming too. So this is,
well, it's funny. I've been playing a lot of these like retro platformers lately because I picked up a Switch and it's just like flooded with these retro platformers. It's like, it's just, there's like a million.
I mean, Switch is flooded with a lot of things right now in a good way, you know?
Yeah,
but for sure. Absolutely. Definitely those.
Yeah. So there's a lot of these. So I've been playing more of them, but I do feel like it, like I said, the platforming's forgiving, but it's so, I feel like every new stage, there's a new like level of innovation on how to like use your abilities and how to kind of traverse the stage and how to use some of the environmental stuff to your advantage. It's so much fun. And I feel like the boss fights are also in Mega Man. I feel like sometimes they're nearly impossible.
Yeah.
Unless you like absolutely memorize a pattern.
You got to know all the things.
In Shovel Knight, right. In Shovel Knight, I feel like they're a little bit more forgiving. You can kind of fool around and try different things on bosses, and you don't have to use a certain weapon. You can use, you know, all the abilities at your disposal.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I really like. Yeah. So it lets you just like be your character and fight how you kind of want to fight without having to do some sort of trick to beat the bosses, which I think is really cool. The reason why this is called Treasure Trove is you don't just get the first Shovel Knight game. You get Plague of Shadows, where you play as Plague Knight, which is a whole nother full campaign where you play as Plague Knight. And you get Spectre of Torment, where you play as Spectre Knight. And all these different knights have different abilities and different unlocks. So it's like you get three full campaigns, all with different bosses and different levels. And I mean, they're full. Like, I'm playing through Spectre of Torment now, which is a prequel. And you kind of get to see the origins of these characters and a little bit more about them. And there's like, I think, 9 or 10 different stages and 9 or 10 different bosses in Spectre of Torment, along with 8 to 10 different abilities, items, and then different like suits to unlock as well. So there's a ton of stuff just in this one portion of the game. And on top of that, with this treasure trove, you get another campaign that is yet to be released called the King Knights campaign, and a co-op sort of Smash style battle mode where you play as the knights on each other in like a battle stage called Battle Mode.
Holy crap.
And on top of this, the game's co-op. So you can play Shovel Knight 2-player all the way through, which is just insane. So one player plays as blue Shovel Knight.
I did not know that.
Green Shovel Knight. So you can co-op through Shovel Knight.
Is it like local or online as well?
It's both.
What?
So it's freaking crazy. Okay. So right now at the Switch store during the Black Friday sale, which I think is going on for a few more days, you can get Treasure Trove for $20. Mm-hmm. I've played Spectre of Torment because I'm actually starting back at I wanted to play them in like chronological order to like get the full story. So I started with Spectre of Torment, which is the prequel. I'm probably like 10 hours into this game already, and I haven't beaten Spectre of Torment. And I'm loving it. Like I said, it's not frustrating for me at all. The abilities are fun and cool. And the style, it's just like it's done by a company called Yacht Club Games, who have been making these Shovel Knight games at this point for like, I think they've been working on it for like 7 years. Mm-hmm. But it's the music is brilliant. The design is brilliant. Each one of the knights is just like really iconic looking. For you, Scott, who collects amiibos, they actually made 4 different knight amiibos.
I've only known of one. I didn't know that they made additional ones other than the traditional, like the blue one.
Well, they're making... my music is coming back out of nowhere.
it's gotta be in your browser somewhere, because it's not me. Dude, I promise it's not me.
Who knows? I love it. Hopefully it's in the podcast. Anyway, really, really great stuff. I definitely recommend Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. Playing it now on the Switch, I've played it mostly handheld, but I have plugged it into the base and played it on the big screen as well. Great stuff. Check it out.
Nice. Well, I will then add another Switch game to your list as well, which is, again, not something that is new as far as the current release goes, but it's something that is relatively new to Switch, which was Armello. Armello is sort of the digital fantasy board game. Have you played this before?
No, I have not played Armello, but I do remember getting like press releases for it and looked at it and I was like, oh, this looks interesting.
Yeah, it's sort of been on my radar for a very long time. And for whatever reason, I just, you know, again, too many games, right? But for whatever reason, I never picked it up on Xbox when it was originally released for console or for Steam. Finally picked it up. I got opportunity to review it on Switch, and I actually feel like, again, this kind of game is one of, you know, a perfect game for the Switch platform, and given that the game is portable, you know, you can take it with you and play anywhere, which is really cool. So, like I said, Armello is a digital fantasy board game, and when I say board game, like, I thought this game was going to be sort of like, you know, something with like a campaign that you play through, you know, with like different things to unlock and collect. And I'm sort of pleasantly surprised that it's not that. It really is. I do feel like when they designed this game, they made it, you know, with materials, physical materials first, and then translated that to a digital game.
Okay.
But it's a fantasy board game where there's a hexagonal map. And the idea is that there are 4 characters, and you can choose from a cast of characters that you want to play as. The 4 characters all have special abilities, and they are all trying to deal with this king whose castle is in the center of the board. The king is infected with this plague, and so that kind of serves as the game's world timer. And as the king sort of descends into madness, he alters the board and the rules of the game on every turn. And the four characters are trying to deal with the king and meet one of, you know, a handful of win conditions for winning the game. So you could either, you know, you can kill the king by storming the castle. You can cleanse him of the plague. You can become corrupted yourself and sort of kill the king and take over, you know, as like the most corrupted person in the kingdom. And then I think there's another method that you can win where you just sort of collect victory points by completing quests on the board. But in a, you know, it's a board game in the sense that it would be one of those board games for like adults, like a very complicated game with a lot of rules and stuff like that. So it's nice to have it translated to a digital game because you don't really have to do all the math and keep track of, you know, everybody's victory points and where they are on the map and how the rules are changing and everything. So that's really nice and convenient. The other thing that adds an interesting twist on the game is that you can collect cards from three different decks. So on your turn, you can draw cards from three different decks, which give you different talents and abilities. And so, you know, the decks you draw from might, you know, you might choose based on your character's play style. So you might have a character who's, you know, really all up on doing combat against other players. You might have somebody mm-hmm. who's more into magic, so being a little bit more sneaky and fighting from long range. Or you might have somebody who's more of a roguish character, so you're kind of like in and out with your attacks and just trying to steal things and set traps for people. And so, you know, obviously in any great board game, you can kind of mess with the other characters in the game, and you can certainly do that in this one. It's one of those interesting games where like the rules can change up until the last minute. So even if I was playing a match in which everything felt like it was going wrong, I always felt like I had an opportunity to win all the way up until the end because, you know, the rules are constantly changing and, you know, the king can send out a proclamation that turns the game on its head right away. And then all of a sudden you're, you know, closer to being in first place than you thought you were, which is kind of exciting too. It is a multiplayer game as well.
Okay.
And of course it integrates with the, you know, the new Nintendo Switch online service. So you would have to have a Switch online account in order to do that. But honestly, I've just been playing in the single player mode, which I'm really enjoying because, like I said, I feel like there's maybe like 8 different characters that you can play as in the game, and they all have sort of different things that they're good at and different ways to win the game. As you play through the game as well, you can unlock different modifiers for your characters and sort of different kinds of, because when you pick your character, you can start the match by saying, I want this character with like these accessories, and it kind of alters them slightly. So the game, in my opinion, has a lot of replay value. The matches take about less than a half an hour if you're playing single player. I'm not sure how that works with like the timing of a multiplayer game with actual people.
Right.
But it is just so much fun, and it's just one of those games, you know, like you were talking about Kingdom Rush, where you can play it offline. You can take it with you. If you have a half an hour where you just want to play something, you can play it. And especially like in a situation that we're in now where we all like to play board games, but obviously we're in different places and we can't do that. I think this would be something fun to do as well. If you had a group of people that all had the game, you could play a board game digitally together, you know, and then be physically separate, which is what we would do if we were all in the same place anyways, is we just huddle cool. around the table and play a board game. So that's Armello. It's available everywhere.
Really liking the art style quite a bit on this too. So it's a very pretty looking game.
Yeah, it's all like hand-drawn art. And then like the art in-game is also really good. Like the cards art is all hand-drawn. And then in-game, it also has like a nice fantasy style as well. And all the characters are sort of like anthropomorphic animals. So it has a very like fun appearance, but you know, a lot of depth and complexity to the game. So don't let that fool you.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Really quick, I'll quickly talk about Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, because Matt brought this up already, but I had not watched it yet. So I finished it up while I was away. I got stuck traveling in the snow, so I ended up watching this whole season of the show, and I ended up actually really liking it. So it's funny, my timeline was kind of split. Just judging from Twitter, a lot of people were like really loving it, and then some people were like kind of in the middle. And I ended up being in the loving it camp, but it's really a show that is kind of designed for me specifically, because I love like campy horror, ridiculousness. That's just always been my thing. One of my favorite shows of all time was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Right. And this spiritually is a lot like Buffy. So this takes place in the Riverdale universe. So it's actually based on an Archie comic. And of course, those of you who grew up in the 90s probably remember Sabrina the Teenage Witch. So a lot of the characters from Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Sabrina the comic are in this show. But this is a very hard R version, available on Netflix now. I want to say there's 10 to 12 episodes available to stream.
Okay.
It's based on the comic book Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is the sort of the realistic, gritty look of the Archieverse. Supposedly it takes place in the same universe as the Riverdale TV show, which is on the CW. And it's all about Sabrina becoming 16 years old and kind of trying to find her place in the world and figuring out if she's going to be a good witch or a bad witch. It sounds silly, but the fact that it's hard R makes for some really hardcore crazy stuff. So there's exorcisms, there's demons, there's lots of blood. I think Matt even mentioned in the first episode, it's not even a spoiler, but the first episode you get to see someone like just obliterated by a pair of scissors. Like, so a pair of scissors get somebody in the neck and it's just like ultra violent, gory blood spraying everywhere, and it kind of lets you realize that the show is not fucking around.
Okay.
I'd say the reason I think Matt didn't like it as much as I did is it does have some pacing issues. There are a couple filler episodes, which is something that happens with Netflix quite a lot. But overall, I think it's great. I think the supporting cast is fantastic. The character of one of the aunts by the name of Zelda is played by Miranda Otto, who was Eowyn in Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And she, like, in my opinion, steals the show as this sort of like cold aunt, sort of with like a heart of gold, and every scene she's in is fantastic. And it's just I ended up leaving the show, like, I think when I got about halfway through, I was like, I don't know if I'm loving this. And I even told Matt that. I was just like, I'm liking it, but I'm not loving it. But then by the end, the last three or four episodes, I really, really enjoyed. And I highly recommend Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I just read that they are coming out with a holiday special. So there's going to be a Christmas okay. Christmas episode available on Netflix, sort of like a special Christmassy one. And then it has already been picked up for season two. So look for season two, I want to say probably end of next year. So good stuff.
So you're telling me Melissa Joan Hart is not in this show?
No, but they did some really, really creative marketing where they had the whole old cast of Sabrina sit around and watch the new Sabrina.
Oh, okay.
And they had reaction videos. So it is definitely endorsed by the old cast.
Smart.
It's funny because a couple years ago at Comic-Con, I got to briefly talk to Melissa Joan Hart for a movie she was directing, actually. And one of the questions that somebody else asked was about Sabrina and if she knew anything about the new show. And at the time she didn't, but she was still very supportive. So Melissa Joan Hart has the seal of approval for new Sabrina, but it's good, man. It's like, it's super fun. If you you're into Supernatural and shows like that, you'll probably like it.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Let's see, man, this is weird. Like, you're turning into a platformer, which is amazing. I seem to be turning into a person that plays Souls style games, which I never thought I would do. Right. Cause I'm playing, you guys got me turned on to Dead Cells. I'm really enjoying Vampire, which is not super hardcore, but still kind of leans that way. A game that I've really been stoked on ever since its original release was The Surge. And I know I've talked about the game before, but The Surge is one of those Soul Styles games, but it has more of a sci-fi aesthetic. And I don't know that there are a lot of games in this genre that are based in science fiction, because a lot of them are kind of like fantasy style games, right?
Yeah.
You know, like Dark Souls and Bloodborne. And even this the developer that made The Surge, their previous game was Lords of the Fallen. So again, you know, in that same vein, but the Surge is a sci-fi based kind of, hardcore action fighting game. But the cool thing is, and I love it when games do this, is that The Surge has been keeping up with DLC releases, and they're, you know, while they're doing that simultaneously, there's a sequel to this game that is already planned. So, I think I would tell people that this might be like the best game that they haven't played this year.
Go for it.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, quietly going under the radar, you know, in the same way that like, I don't know that everybody was playing Dying Light a couple of years ago, but you know, that was one of those games that was, that kept going strong, you know, having lots of players and success as well. So it's always nice to talk about a game that is finding success and, you know, being able to keep creating things in that world. So most recently The Surge released a DLC pack called The Good, The Bad, and The Augmented. So as you might assume, it's sort of a Western themed expansion for this game, which is, I feel like, kind of very timely given like the popularity of shows like Westworld.
Right.
But in so pretty much what this is that, you know, functionally, as far as the gameplay goes, it's a challenge chamber, right? So this game has a traditional campaign. If you've ever played a Soul Cell game, you probably know that you kind of need to grind through certain sections of the game over and over again in order to upgrade your character. The thing that's cool about The Surge is that you can actually dismember enemies as you're killing them and then take their armor and their weapons and add those to your inventory. So that's part of this game as well. But after you, you know, after you complete the campaign, there's still more to do. So in The Good, in The Bad, and The Augmented, they release a series of sort of challenge campaigns where you can play through these mini episodes. It's sort of this like weird, bizarre Western TV show gone wrong with all of these, you know, crazy augmented humans that you need to fight against as the bosses as you play through each episode. I think it's like 8 or 10 episodes in this DLC. And then, of course, what you can also do is that you can add augmentations to the levels as you play through them. So if you want to do things that like make the level harder or make it easier, just, you know, add things that are goofy, you can kind of toggle on these switches that add some replay ability to this. And of course, you know, the important thing that is part of a DLC like this is that, of course, there's new armor and weapons that you can unlock. So different, bunch of different ways that you can customize your character and then take those back into like New Game Plus or back into your main game. But it's just sort of crazy because, you know, something that this game didn't have before, they added a narrator for this campaign. So you kind of have someone that's like antagonizing you in the same way that you would be antagonized while playing Portal, right?
Cool.
Someone to make fun of you and tell you what you're doing wrong and, you know, just kind of generally, you know, make it a little bit more lighthearted. The main body of The Surge didn't really have a lot of humor in it as well. So this DLC introduces some humor into a game that's otherwise sort of like bleak and, you know, meant to be like a dystopian world. But, you know, they still maintain that feel of having a dystopian universe. But in this one, it's sort of more of like a dark humor when you're playing through the DLC. So I think it's cool that, you know, literally they released this, I think, almost a full year after the game originally came out while they're simultaneously working on, you know, a sequel to the game. So, you know, again, I know I've talked about a lot of these games in this genre on this podcast, but just for some reason, they're speaking to me in an interesting way where I just kind of feel like I want to be challenged a little bit. And I've never felt like I was good at these kinds of games. And now I'm kind of like willing to step up to the challenge and, you know, go through those repeated failures, because when you finally do, you know, get to the point where you beat one of the bosses, it's such a great feeling because you know that
it really is. Yeah. I remember beating my head against the wall with Bloodborne, mm-hmm. and then eventually you can farm that boss that was kicking your ass and it just feels so good.
Same thing with Dead Cells as well. You know, it's like the first time you get to the concierge, you're like, oh shit, what the hell? You know, mm-hmm. like this is impossible, right?
Yeah.
And then you get a little stronger and then you find, you know, some weapons and techniques that work for you. And then you beat it. And it's like, this is amazing. You feel so good about it. And The Surge is no different. You know, you'll get to the, you'll probably, you know, if you were to play this game today, you would almost certainly die fighting the first enemy. And then, you know, fast forward to a couple hours later, and then you're just kind of jogging through the levels to farm for XP and stuff like that, trying to get up to that next boss. And that's, I don't know. I'm starting to find the appeal in those games, which I really didn't understand before. So that's really exciting too.
Yeah, I think it's the same with me with some of these new sort of new age retro platformers. Mm-hmm. I think what they've done recently, I don't want to get too into it, but they've sort of taken and borrowed from a number of different genres and added things like skill trees and experience points and better unlocks and just a lot of modern and elements from like the Souls games and kind of added them to just puzzle platformers and created this beautiful thing where it has sort of the sensibilities of a modern game with like the trappings of like an ancient, you know, 8-bit game.
Exactly.
And that's what makes Shovel Knight just so appealing to me is like you look at it and you're like, oh, I'm looking at something from, you know, 1987, and then you play it and you're like, oh, but this feels just like buttery smooth and everything moves great and feels great and sounds great and the weapons feel great and move great. And it's like, okay, so this is not a game from 1987. Mm-hmm. It just kind of looks like one. So I love that.
Yeah, I think you can, I've heard a lot of good things about Celeste as well. The same idea, right?
Everyone says Celeste is fantastic.
Yeah, it has that retro platforming style, but I also hear that it has a lot of sort of, I don't want to call them like accessibility features, but things that just sort of, you know, provide like a quality of life for players that come at the game from all different angles, right? So it's
right
you know, it's a game that can be played and enjoyed by everybody, which I think has sort of been a theme throughout this episode, and something that something that I think is really important, right, is that gaming is for everybody,
right?
And to the extent that you can, you know, design your game in such a way that it appeals to hardcore players and casual players, or people that are, you know, have color blindness, or you know, whatever the case may be, or people that just want to you know, explore or experience the story of your game. Like, you know, to the extent that you can make that available to the greatest number of people as possible, you know, all that stuff elevates the game for all players, which I think is super cool.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that was everything, man.
Everything. Yeah. I think we did it.
I think we did it too.
Great.
Well, that was fun, man. Glad you're back.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back. I don't know I don't know when I'm going to be on this again, but hopefully soon.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll
make it happen.
Yeah, sooner rather than later.
Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 326 of the Rated NA podcast. You guys can find us on Twitter, and it's at @nerdappropriate. Send us a message there and say hi. You go to our Facebook page, always horribly neglected, slash nerdappropriate on Facebook. Don't go to /Facebook on Facebook. That probably will just lead you into an abyss somewhere. So /nerdappropriate on Facebook.
Loop.
You can email us directly. And it's nerds@nerdappropriate.com. Send us an email with any sort of questions or comments or whatever you want to say. And we will be having all sorts of fun new content throughout the month of December. So definitely keep your eyes on our feeds and give us a follow if you're not following us already.
Mm-hmm.
And leave us a review on iTunes, or Spotify, or wherever else you leave reviews. We don't really know.
Yeah.
We're not good at this yet. So
it's been 8 years. We're still not good at it.
Yeah. All right. All right. Thanks, guys.
See ya. I will hit record. I'm going to go to a different window and then come back to this one and make sure it is still recording.
Sounds good.
What happens if I push the marker button while it's recording? Marker. Oh, I can. Okay, good. We're good to go.